Well, good afternoon. My name is Jason Hayes. I'm the lead pastor of Shoreline Church. And traditionally, on this between Sundays, Wednesday, I am led by, I am not only led by, but I am mentored by the great Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. And today is the exception. Today is a day that I have been left to sit in his chair, a day of great calamity, a day of great fear and trembling has set upon us. But today I've also done something in Andrew's absence, as he had a commitment with Hope Resource Center. I have done something that is a sign of maturity. It is a sign of great, I think, self-confidence. I have 100% stacked the deck, meaning that in Andrew's absence, I need Andrew to come back next week and to see that the ratings still did what they did with him gone. I don't want to lead this show without him, but I need this week to at least make a statement that I can do it without him. I need the listeners to communicate. I don't want to do the show without Andrew, but I can do it. So I have unequivocally, in a great, great move of maturity, I've stacked the deck. I have brought in a ringer. And today I am joined by my really, really good friend, Garland Vance. Garland, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
No pressure now.
I know. I feel like I have to perform above and beyond the call of duty.
Yes.
Like, this is big pressure.
Yes. And you should feel that way.
I need to like do stretching in the corner over there? And
maybe we'll probably try to do that during the break. Okay. This afternoon, we are going to get into some really, really important discussion. I really do believe that what we're going to talk about this afternoon, and for those that will be listening afterwards via our podcast, I think that the discussion we're going to have today is one that is really, really fruitful. But let me tell you a little bit about Garland. Garland is not only a friend today, but he has been a longtime friend. And we've not always kept in touch over the many years, but we met all the way back at Carson Newman College when there was only the colors black and white.
Right.
Like
the 90s.
Yeah. So Garland and I crossed paths at Carson Newman. I was only there for 1 year, and then I transferred to the University of Tennessee. We met at that time, and Garland has had a pretty remarkable trajectory over that time and quite the journey. He is really been not only a good friend, but he's also a thought leader when it comes to leadership. He served in the church world. He served in the parachurch world, the para-organizational world. He served in corporate America, and he's done a number of different things that brings him to the point today where he now gets to travel around and he speaks with various organizations about leadership. He consults organizations about leadership, and he also writes on various aspects of leadership. And today we're going to talk about one of those facets that certainly probably impacts all of us as leaders, but I would say actually impacts every person.
Yeah.
And it is the discussion related to the topic of busyness.
Yeah.
So you recently wrote a book, right?
I did.
Yeah. So you wrote a book, and the discussion in the book is about becoming unbusy per se. And before we even jump into that, like, you got a pretty remarkable, shout out, via the internet.
I did.
Like randomly to tell people what happened.
So, on October 17th, I got
you don't really remember exactly when it was, but on October 17th at 4:04.
It actually was about that time. I was getting ready to shut down for the day, and a LinkedIn message popped up on my phone from one of my clients saying, "Congrats, Garland." And I had no idea what she was talking about. And so I clicked on the link, and it was an article on Forbes naming my book, Getting Unbusy, as one of the 7 books everyone on your team should read.
Yes, that's fantastic,
it was pretty amazing.
And you
amazing.
Did not know that was coming.
I did not know it was coming. I had not met the author of the article. Still haven't met him, reached out to him, but hadn't met the author of the article. And it was in there with a Zig Ziglar book, which was just shocking to me.
That's so cool. And we joked. In fact, so Garland and his family are dear folks with Shoreline Church, where I'm the lead pastor. And we bumped into each other at one of our gatherings. I think it was our leadership gathering. On a Sunday evening. And he kind of pulled me off to the side and he's like, dude, you will not believe what has happened. And he said something about Forbes. And I was like, now just to make sure, we're not like talking about like some Forbes that like lives in Crossville.
You mean like Randy Forbes from Kingston? And I said, no.
No, like these
talking
Forbes.
Like Forbes.
That is so good, man. All right, so talk to us a little bit about what you do. I mean, I gave a little bit of a very vague kind of backdrop of what you do, but give us a little bit more details of what you do and what prompted you to write this book about busyness.
Right. So we work with leaders and organizations. When I say we, I'm talking about my company, Advanced Leadership.
Right.
So we work with leaders and organizations to help them live and lead with greater purpose, productivity, and peace. And so that can mean going into an organization and doing a keynote or a multi-hour workshop. That could be consulting directly with leaders or the leadership team, or even coaching one-on-one around purpose, productivity, and peace. And so purpose is knowing your why.
Right.
Right? Do you know your why? Productivity is doing your why. It's not just getting a bunch of stuff done. It's actually staying so focused on the reason that you or your organization have been put on the planet that you actually do it. And then peace is resting in your why. And what we see so many leaders and so many organizations do is they try to take on so many projects, you know, 15 priorities this year and so many different ways of diversification that they actually lose focus on why they're actually on the planet. And so peace is about resting in the why that you have.
I love that. And certainly, you know, your focus really is on that leader. And so I would imagine in knowing you that there's a lot of those discussions where you're sitting down with the heads of you know, businesses or heads of nonprofits or church ministry leaders. But really, to a degree, we are all called to some role of leadership.
And so
whether it's leading our home, whether it's leading a group of, parents in the HOA or neighbors, whatever that might be, I think all of these principles really can apply to every one of us.
Yeah, was really one of the surprises to me is I wrote this book specifically for the business leader, the nonprofit leader. And I started having stay-at-home parents come up to me and say, this is changing my life. This is changing the way.
But I didn't write it for you.
And that's
not what you respond back.
Right. You definitely don't say that. You say, of course, that's what I was thinking the whole time. I had you in mind. but it shouldn't be a surprise because all of us exercise influence and leadership in some capacity in our lives. And so whether you're a CEO or whether you're a stay-at-home parent, this book will walk you through very specific steps to take to help move from stress, overwhelm, and exhaustion to purpose, productivity, and peace.
So today we're going to talk about really the focus of your book, which is busyness. And I want you here momentarily to share information about how really we have data that talks or that identifies this to be an issue that's really plaguing so many people. But this was something that was personal for you. Give us a little bit of the backdrop of that.
Very personal. So it was back in 2013, and I was leading one of Chick-fil-A's nonprofits.
Right.
And as I was doing that, I was in good health, and I loved my job, and I had three young kids. But I started having some really weird physical symptoms, chronic migraine headaches, heart palpitations. I was having exhaustion, like go-to-bed exhausted, wake-up exhausted, and forgetfulness. All of those things were happening. So I went to my yearly doctor visit, and it was Dr. Tate, and I said, tell me what's going on here. I'm getting a little concerned because of the forgetfulness and the headaches. Is that something, you know, that's going on in my brain?
And so you're expecting him to come back with some, you know, neurological disorder, or you're expecting him to come back and say you've got heart issues.
Yeah,
or...
and I'm thinking to myself, I've got, like, I don't mind a little flair for the drama.
Right,
so if
if
he says something bad, I'm playing this up.
Yeah,
like, I'm getting some sympathy from this. And so he said, well, tell me about your life. And I said, well, I'm busy, but just like everybody else is busy. And he said, well, tell me what busy means for you. And I said, well, I work about 60 hours a week for this nonprofit, and I travel about 60 days a year. I started working on a doctorate in leadership a few years ago, so I give about 10 to 20 hours a week on that. I have three young kids at home, and they're not overcommitted, but you know they're involved in things. And I said, my wife and I were helping out with developing a leadership program for our church, and so you know that's all been going on. And I said, oh, by the way, my mom passed away last year, so I've actually slowed down a little bit. And he said, okay, I think I know what your problem is. The problem is stress. And I got mad. I was like, that stress is for
weak people.
Don't
give me some lame answer about stress.
Yeah. And he said, I think your problem is stress, and your stress is caused by busyness. You've got too much going on. And since I was working on a doctorate, I was like, you know what? I'm going to see if he's right, and I'm going to check this out. And as I dug into it, I realized how much he was right and how I wasn't the only person who was experiencing it.
Wow. Yeah. So let's jump forward a bit. So you continued to do the research. You continued to, you know, push ahead in this field of busyness. You're not alone in this, are you?
No. In fact, you know, I think the best test of seeing how many people are busy is asking a person, how you doing?
Oh,
and
no.
How many times is the answer, oh, I'm good, I'm just really busy.
Right. It's become a badge of honor, hasn't it?
It is totally a badge of honor. It's something that we...
Or a perceived badge of honor,
exactly,
we should probably say.
We brag about it. And I think one of my goals is to begin making busyness a bad word. In fact, my 9-year-old son came downstairs yesterday and he said, Dad, I'm so sorry I said a bad word. And I said, what did you say? And he said, I said busy. And I said, son, you are in trouble.
Yeah. So go to your room.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
And then you're but seriously, thank you for endorsing the book.
Right, exactly. No, but he's got it spot on, and you've got it spot on. We view busyness as this badge of honor. So when somebody asks us how we're doing, we don't say we're doing great. We don't say, you know, let me tell you about my successes. Let me tell you about my struggles. What we say is, I'm busy.
It feels almost as if people, it's as if they're bringing some viability or some credibility to who they are. It's almost their identity. So yeah, I can think of those people. You know, how are you? Oh, you know, like we're supposed to be like, wow, they're really involved in so much. And wow, if they're underwater, if it looks like they're on the brink of collapse, then man, they must be involved in a lot of really important things.
Yeah.
They must be really maximizing the potential of their life. They must be stewarding their gifts really, really well. But I think, as we're going to discuss when we come back from the break, that's really not the case.
It's not. In fact, what we're going to talk about is busyness is doing the exact opposite. And not only is it hurting us, but it's going to diminish our influence and our impact in other people's lives as well.
It's good stuff. We'll talk about it when we come back from the break. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Nice. Dave, that is a great hit bringing us out of the break. Man, we are continuing to take this show to the next level in Andrew's absence. Again, I love Andrew. He's one of my dearest friends. But I think we're making a statement.
I think so.
A strong, strong statement today.
Yeah.
Feels good. Now, I do need to say that Andrew does bring a really strong, you know Andrew well. You know, he brings a really strong red beard to the show. And we often talk about his 12 or 15 passenger van, depending on how many seats are in the actual vehicle at the time. Is there anything that you have brought to the table today that I need to know about? I mean, I don't see a beard.
I don't
see the big van. I mean, I feel though like you've got something that you brought to it.
Well, I did wear my chips and salsa and avocado socks
today. Yes, you did.
So I actually asked my son, I was like, what socks
should
I wear?
You all cannot see this clearly as, you know, we're on air here. But, I mean, these socks that he has brought to the table are full-blown a, they are a Mexican fiesta.
Yeah, and the truth is, I bought these because if I were stranded on an island for a year and could only pick one food to eat, it would be chips and salsa.
Yes. We, in fact, we've had a number of chips and salsa meetings. It's one of our, it's one of our go-tos.
I need to implement those. That's great.
So again, today we are joined by my good friend Garland Vance. Garland is a fantastic thought leader, communicator, speaker, author when it comes to really many different facets of leadership. But today we're talking specifically about one that he's written on recently regarding busyness. And in the book, you actually say that busyness is killing us.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about what you mean there.
Yeah, in fact, the subtitle of the book is Five Steps to Kill Busyness so that you can live with purpose, productivity, and peace. And the research that I did found that busyness truly is killing us. And if we don't kill it, it will kill us first. And the bottom line is every time we experience stress, okay, and stress is whenever we want something different than the way that it is. So stress isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
Right. If I'm walking through the woods and come across a bear, I'm going to experience stress. That's good. Right.
Correct. Better to have some elevated, variables in your body, and run away from the bear than to be completely mild.
Right.
Unimpacted,
and just like,
and be eaten by the
cute
bear.
Little bear. You don't think that.
Right.
But when we experience stress, our body releases adrenaline and cortisol. And adrenaline and cortisol are there to energize us, to focus us. And one of the things that it does is adrenaline in particular shuts down some of our unnecessary bodily systems
right.
at the time. But once the stress is removed, what's supposed to happen is our body engages what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, and it washes adrenaline and cortisol from our body, allows us to recover. So if you've ever, run across a bear in
right.
the woods, about 3 hours later, after you've escaped the bear, you're going to have this moment where you just crash physically, or in your case, every Sunday
yeah.
afternoon
yep.
after you preach,
yep.
right? You have this kind of physical crash. Well, that's our parasympathetic nervous system coming into play to help us rest and recover. So that's how our body is supposed to work. What busyness does, though, is it introduces stress, and it's a good stress, into our life, right? Good commitments, whether it's work or home or kids' activities or whatever it is, all these good stressors that release adrenaline and cortisol give us the energy that we need to deal with it. And then busy people immediately introduce another commitment, another
right.
stressor, and it's a good stress into their life. But all that good stress, when added up, has disastrous effects. And so you're talking about the studies that have been done around adrenaline and cortisol and long-term exposure link it to heart disease,
wow.
to loss of memory,
right.
Chronic headaches, muscle tension, just loss of libido, like all of these
right.
side effects that are coming from it. And it's all because we're so stressed out from good things
right.
that we haven't taken the time for our bodies to recover.
So in the book, you talk about how busyness impacts our productivity. I think that it certainly can impact organizations. You talk about that. But for our listeners today, maybe let's just talk about just kind of the relational dynamic of what busyness does to us. We all care about people. Hopefully we all care about people. we talk often, Andrew and I do. Now, it should also be noted that Andrew has never used the term parasympathetic ever. And so, again, we're just continuing to raise the bar.
I get a point for
oh, yes,
that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good,
yeah,
good.
You'll get a point for that. But we do talk about how we really are indeed made as image bearers.
Right.
And we recognize that the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit exist in community. And so if we are image bearers made in His image, God does, he creates everything with the exception of man by speaking them into existence. But with man, He breathes us into existence. It speaks towards this unique relationship we have, but it also speaks towards this kind of unique role that we play. And so indeed, we are image bearers. God exists in community. We exist in community. And yet sometimes busyness can really mess up all of that that relational piece. Talk a bit about that for us.
So the first thing that I would say is often our busyness is a result of our most loving relationships, right? We love our kids, and so we want them to get involved in everything they want to get involved in. We love our spouse, we love our congregation, we love our coworkers, and so often we say yes to them, to their request, and as a result of that, we have more commitments than we have capacity, and that's when busyness comes into play. So what does busyness do to our relationships? Well, let me give you the technical term. This should get you an extra point, too.
Yes, please,
and
by
then
all means.
Then I'll tell you the story.
Actually, I'm texting them to him right now. So
the technical term that happens is something called depersonalization. And depersonalization is when we begin to actively dislike the people that we love the most. It's the second stage of burnout, is known as depersonalization. But let me tell you a story with this, because I think this is better. So in 1970, these two Princeton researchers named Darley and Batson decided that they would conduct an experiment, and they would take seminary students, Princeton seminary students, and they would give them an assessment that helped them identify some career path options.
Okay.
And then when they got finished with that, they would walk outside, and Darley and Batson would say to the students, "Now we need you to walk across campus, and you're going to deliver a short talk on the Good Samaritan."
Okay.
And once they said that, though, they would put them in three time categories. They would either say low hurry, and low hurry was you're running ahead of schedule, you've got plenty of time, take your time.
Right.
Medium hurry was you've got just enough time to get across, so move with intentionality.
Right.
And then high hurry was you're already running late, get across campus as quickly as you can. So they put these students in these three categories, low, medium, and high hurry. As the student was crossing the campus, there was only one way that they could go, and Darley and Batson planted a man.
I love it.
In the middle of this walkway, who was dressed in rags, and as the student would approach them, he would sit up, the man on the sidewalk would sit up, cough loudly, and moan like he was in pain.
Yes.
Okay? And it was...
He's a physical illustration of the picture of the Good Samaritan.
Of the Good Samaritan, right. So those students in low hurry, over 60% of them stopped to help the man. Those in medium hurry, over 40% stopped to help the man. But for those students who were in high hurry, 10% of them stopped to help the man.
So there's a lack of margin, which thus eliminates our capacity to be able to care for other people.
Exactly. And so we become busy often because we love people so much, and yet that very love of people can create so much busyness that we begin to actively resent them, ignore them, look over them. So it is a relationship killer that stems from a desire to build relationships.
Interesting. Really, really, really interesting. So today, the goal is not just to identify our busyness.
Right.
I mean, I
want it to be a bad word,
there's
more than that.
I think our goal is, and when we come back from the break, is to begin to take some steps and to consider how we might move beyond busyness. My understanding is there's some really helpful steps. In fact, I know there's some really helpful steps as I've read the book. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Well, again, here we are this afternoon. It is a rainy Wednesday afternoon, but let's face it, this probably is one of the best shows we've ever done. And when I say probably, I would say unequivocally, this may be the best show that we've ever done.
Without a doubt, it is the best show with you that I've ever been on.
Well, that feels good. It does feel good. If you are one of our regular listeners and you're just tuning in, indeed, Andrew Wood, my compadre, my ally in, I was about to say journalism. I'm not sure that's really what we're doing. We'll call it broadcasting here today. Andrew is unavailable, but I am joined by my really good friend, Garland Vance, and we're continuing to have a discussion related to busyness. And we've talked about it in the context of our personal relationships. I've alluded to the book that you've recently written talks a lot about it in the context of certainly, productivity and organizations. But as I said before the break, we also don't want to just camp out there and say, hey, it's great that we all recognize that we're busy and that we all have these issues and it's hurting us. In fact, it's killing us. All right. Y'all have a great week.
Right.
We don't want to do that. We want to talk about some steps that might lead us out of that. And so give us a bit of a synopsis and an unpacking of those, and we'll talk a bit about them as we go through it.
Sure. There are five steps. So this ended up being the focus of my doctoral research, was how do we actually get out of busyness. So because I was trained in ministry, they all start with the same letter. You got to use alliteration.
It's absolutely correct.
Right. There's a whole class on that.
Yeah. Like I was reading through the book and I was like, this is all very, very good. And then I saw that there was some alliteration and I was like, this is next level.
That's five stars, right? Yeah. That's five star review right there. Yeah.
I immediately jumped onto Amazon and gave my review right there because
awesome.
Of the alliteration.
Love that. Yeah. So five steps. First step is decide. You have to decide that busyness isn't worth it. And so you need to see what it is doing to you physically, relationally, mentally, emotionally, what it does to your productivity, what it does to your organization. And so in the end of that step, you have to decide busyness isn't worth it and I'm ready to move on. By the way, there is an assessment in there that anybody can take. You don't have to buy the book for it. If you just go to Getting Unbusy Book, that's Getting, no G at the end, right? We're in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very similar to Fixins.
Fixins, that's right.
Yeah, I like that.
So gettingunbusybook.com/assessment, and it's a 20-question assessment that will help you evaluate how you're doing in your busyness.
And that was a decision you had to make. You when you went to the doctor, when you you heard those things, you had to say, wait a minute, like this can't continue.
Right. And so you've got to decide, is it worth it?
You had to make that decision. You're really challenging the readers and obviously today's listeners to make that decision as
right.
well.
And you've got to decide before you know how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. That's it's ultimately about, I'm not going to be busy any longer. And now I need to figure out what to do about that.
Right.
So that's step one. Step two is you deconstruct. You deconstruct some of your inhibiting beliefs. All of us actually have some beliefs that keep us stuck in busyness. And the three most prevalent of those are, I need to be more, I need to do more, and I need to get more. And those three beliefs drive us to do more and more and more. So you deconstruct some inhibiting beliefs, deconstruct some bad habits, in particular, not building boundaries in your life and saying yes to everything. So I walk readers through how they deconstruct those bad habits. And then finally, you need to deconstruct some unwanted commitments.
Yeah.
All of us have commitments that we've said yes to.
Yep.
And immediately after we say yes, we go, why did I just say yes to that? So I walk you through a process for actually identifying what those unwanted commitments are and taking action to uncommit from them.
I think that really resonates with me. I don't want us to get into – we're going to mention all five of these steps, but I really want the listeners today to go and get this book. And so I don't want to get too deep into each and every one of them. But I'm very eager to jump into step three as I know it. But I do want to mention that, you know, our listeners know that I've just come back from sabbatical. You know that I've just come back. I say just came back. I had a sabbatical this summer. And I was reminded of just the very few amount of times that life kind of naturally gives us a reset. In fact, I'll say it to young couples who are about to have a child. Hmm. And I'll say to them, like, listen, life is about to give you a natural opportunity to reset, because everyone's going to give you a pass if you say, hey, listen, the baby's here. I'm not going to be able to continue serving on that board, or I'm not going to be able to continue to be a part of this commitment on a Tuesday night. Like, it gives you a natural reset. My sabbatical was the first, and I would say my actual ministry that I felt like it was a natural reset. Gave me permission to do that. What I took out of some of that reading was that we have to institute it. Meaning that if we just wait for life to do it, I mean, quite literally, if you have two children, that means you got two. You know, I mean, so you're going to have to make this a part of your normal routine, a rhythm of your life. To examine the things that are in your life that you're saying, this does not need to be there.
Right.
It's not that it's bad. It may not just necessarily be the best thing for my time.
Yeah, and the better we get at doing that, the less we have to do that, right?
Right.
You still need to evaluate regularly, but if you implement the habit of saying no quickly, and then you don't get stuck in a lot of unwanted obligations.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so jump into the third step for us.
So the third step is design, and this is where you have enough room and margin in your life to actually say, what's the life that I want to live?
I love this.
So many of us are living somebody else's dream. We're living somebody else's life, and we haven't actually taken the time to say, what's the life that I want to live? And so the first thing that you design is you design pace and space. What's the pace of life that you want to live, and what's the space or the margin that you want in your life? And then you begin to design what I call the core four. And the core four are the four practices that I found the most purposeful and rested people implement first into their life. And those four practices are relationships, recreation, rest, and reflection. Of course, they all start with the same letter as well.
Again, another point.
All right.
If I had my – oh, here we are. Yeah, there's
there
another
we go.
Point.
There we
you.
Go.
Congratulations.
But what I found is very purposeful and unbusy people build those four practices into their life first and then build everything else around that.
Yes, yeah, so I have spent a good amount of time with you. We're going to continue to do that. You guys have been a Shoreline now how long as far as just being around?
About a year and a half.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And so we've had these discussions even before the book came out. We've talked about this. I knew this was kind of in your wheelhouse, things that were connected to your doctorate work and things of that sort. And so, you know, what does any mature person do? He kind of pries a little bit. And like, okay, so how much of this is just philosophy? How much of this is just kind of theory? But you guys have really attempted to incorporate this into your own life. In fact, I saw with the Fair Press, a local newspaper, a month or two ago, actually featured your family, because that's something you guys are really trying to do. And that's not an easy process, is it?
Not an easy process. It took us a lot longer than it takes most people who read the book, because I had to figure out what it was going to look like and before others
could implement.
Give us
some of those practical things, like things that you guys have done.
So one of the things that we do is we take a weekly Sabbath. That's one of the best practices that I can imagine. Whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, taking 24 hours every week to take time off not only helps you rest and recover and build relationships, but it also actually makes you more productive.
Yeah.
Because when you shrink the amount of time that you have to do work, you can actually get more done. It's called Parkinson's Law. Work expands to fill the time allotted. So if you give all your time to it, it's going to take up all your time.
That resonated with me, because I fear at times what we've done is we replaced Sabbath with a day that we worship. And I know that sounds, to some may sound synonymous, but what that might mean is, okay, so I went and I participated in, the gathering of my local church, which was great. And that is fruitful and hopefully life-giving, and you're getting the word of God dumped into you. But then it was immediately accompanied by a thousand other activities that were that Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, or, even maybe things that were happening before that. And so it's the idea of rest and Sabbath is often missed.
Right. Which was, if you think about it, Sabbath is the only spiritual discipline that was instituted before sin.
Yeah.
And so we were created not simply to be human doings, but we were created to implement rest into our lives. God is the only infinitely energetic. We are human beings.
Yeah.
And part of being is meaning that we rest. So rest could be sleep, it could be naps, but there's also a sense of recreation where we find things that we love to do for the sheer sake of doing them.
I love that.
And we do that.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back from the break. I want to hear a little bit more about a few of the things you do, and then we're going to jump into steps 4 and 5, and we'll wrap up our time here in just a moment.
Sounds great.
Let's face it today. I mean, we have been wild.
We have. I feel like that's your theme song.
In the King Pure Water Studios here, Joy 620 WRJZ. I mean, that is, I think we have embodied wild today.
Absolutely.
And without Andrew Wood.
Yeah, I think he may have actually brought it down.
I would agree.
His beard is just, it takes up too much space.
Oh man, Andrew, we love you. We look forward to you being back with us next week. But I am again today joined by my good friend Garland Vance. We're talking about busyness in a recent book that he wrote regarding becoming unbusy and how at times busyness is killing us and how we're going to have to kill busyness in response to it. And so we were talking before the break about some things that your family personally has done. Give us one more and then we'll jump into the next.
Yeah, so we did a crazy thing. I don't recommend that everybody does this, but as we were writing the book, my family was living just outside of Houston, Texas, and we wanted to move to a place that would actually bring life to us. We weren't enjoying that area of the country, great people, but not a great area to live, and wanted to move to a place that would bring life, but also allow us to build our business and stay at an unbusy pace. We picked Knoxville, Tennessee. So we uprooted our family. Not the best way to start unbusyness, but we were able to do that and move here, and it's been an incredible adventure for us.
I love that. And again, you know, for the sake of time, we won't get into all the various steps that they've made as a family or taken as a family, but I'd encourage you to follow Garland, follow his journey, follow their family's journey. How can people actually find you, you know, through any number of channels if people wanted to learn a little bit more about either the book or your story?
Yeah, so the best way right now is Advance Leadership. That's no D at the end of Advance, advanceleadership.live. You can find out more about us there, and I'm on every social media platform except Instagram right now. That'll be eventually.
Yeah. Well, I, as our listeners know, I am the opposite. I bailed on all things Facebook, bailed on all things Twitter, and am only on Instagram.
You're trendier than I.
Well, no, I just think I didn't have the capacity. Speaking of this, I was like, I can't do it anymore. I can't listen to this much opinion. And so I made some steps. But today, we've got just a few more minutes. Give us steps number 4 and 5 quickly. Again, we want people to read the book, so we're not going to read the book for them here on air. But give them the other two steps.
So step 4 is you develop. Once you've designed the life you want to live, you begin to develop it. And that's where I really get super practical of actions that you need to take and implement on a daily basis to stay at an unbusy pace. Step 5 is you draw others in. What I discovered was that people, once they eliminate busyness from their life, it can be very lonely if they're not drawing other people in, because they're living at a pace that nobody else is living at.
Yeah.
And so step 5 is you draw others in. You draw in your family, you draw in your friends, and you draw in your coworkers. And that's where busyness has this multiplying effect that transforms families and communities and organizations.
Yeah, so if there was one, for you personally, if there were one thing that you're like, man, this has been kind of a defining, redeeming variable, meaning something as we have worked as a family, as you've worked as an individual, because again, you're very successful professionally. We're talking about this really in kind of invading every aspect of your life. If there was one fruit that you would say, man, this is like the thing that's come out of this, what's one that really stands out to you?
To me, it's a depth of relationship.
I love that.
I was so busy that I resented the people that I loved the most.
Yeah.
And really saw them as a hindrance in many ways.
Almost detriment to the
right. Like, I've got so much to do, I don't have time to spend time with you. And the depth of relationships. The last few years, our family's taken long vacations to visit friends that we love. So that's the biggest bonus. Right.
Garland, you're a dear friend. You're an incredible thought leader. Again, thank you for being here. You have raised the bar. We will accept Andrew Wood back next week. But thank you for being here.
It has been my pleasure. Andrew, missed having you here, but you got a lot to live up to.
We'll see you next week on Between Sundays.